Welcome everybody to the second day of the Archives, Libraries, Museums and Special Collections Conference. Thank you all for coming to the first session. It's sometimes a bit of a challenge after the excitement of the first day. But I'm very, very pleased to be springing in as a, that's such Dinglish, to jump in as a replacement chairperson. The person who was planned to chair this session has unfortunately been caught in the transit monster. One of her flights was delayed, meaning that she missed the next one, so she's been unable to arrive at the conference in time, which is very sad for her. So I'll be, I'm not Zakia Collier, I am Kate Davison, as you all know, and I'm one of the organisers of the conference. So thank you all for coming. This session is called Video as a Method of Archival Self-Documentation. We have five speakers, four presentations, and we'll just go in the order that they appear in the conference programme. So nothing has changed in terms of the conference programme for this session. So first of all, we're going to be hearing from Dagmar Schultz, then Veronica McKenzie, then Nicole Fernandez-Ferrer and Suzette Robichon, and then Hongwei Bao will be finishing up. And then we will have about 25 minutes for discussion after that, for group discussion and questions and exchange. So first of all, I would like to introduce Dagmar Schultz. I also draw your attention, obviously, to the abstracts and the biographies in the book. Dagmar Schultz has been a long-time activist in Berlin and is the filmmaker of a film about Audre Lorde's years in Berlin. And I'm very, very excited to hear what she has to tell us today.
Okay. Well, I think I'll stand up because unless I need to. Kate mentioned that we made the film All the Lord of Berlin Years, which was shown at the Berlin Film Festival in 2012 and has gone around the world by now. It has been at 75 festivals. We now have Portuguese, Brazilian subtitles. They're just making Korean subtitles and Polish subtitles. So it's been quite a journey. And if you're interested, please send me your contact and you'll get a newsletter, which is always quite interesting. At the same time when the film came out, we created the Audre Lorde Archive at the Free University of Berlin, which is quite an important archive. It has been used quite a bit by people from the United States and Germany and other places. And so that's one archival activity. Then in the following years, people came to Berlin and asked, well, is there an Audre Lorde city tour? Where did she live? Where did she have her coffee? Or what did she do here? Yes. So, you know, we decided, well, we might as well go on to places where she had worked, where she had spent her leisure time, and where she gave readings. And we created this Audre Lorde online journey, which is available in both in German and in English. And you can see there's a map of the city. You can go with your, you can use it on your smartphone or on the computer. Computer is nicer because you have a bigger screen. You can click on any of these icons I don't have a hand mouse here, and I don't know how I'm going to do with this one here. So I sit down. If you click on one of the icons, let's see, let me get another one. For instance, yeah, it tells you where it is, tells you the place, and when you go there, you get picture and text. Are you good at this?
Yeah, you can use it.
Yes. Ah, yeah, okay.
If you need to click somewhere here first because it's highlighted.
I'm sorry. This
that's okay.
But having only 15 minutes, that's a bit enervating. Where's that young woman who was going to help me?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So you get pictures, you get text, and you get. I'm going somewhere else. No, seriously, where is she?
She had to come to the next station. Oh. Back in
the cross.
Yeah, the cross.
Yeah, back to the map, you go up there. And what's really useful, I think, is you have a manual with content. Okay. I can't handle this. I'm sorry.
What do you want to do?
I want to go down the page. Oh, there it works? Okay. Okay, good. I have a different. So this tells you something about the website, how to use it. And then you have a table of contents, which gives you short information on each of the sites. And I now want to just give you a few examples. Now I go to America House. So you get a picture of the place, either from old times or from old times and present day. And go next. And below it is text, which we maybe don't look at now because I should be able to do that too. And if you go on, yeah. And then you get a video. Not all of the places have videos, but the whole first series is with videos, and on the bottom there's a series of just pictures with text. And we can just take that. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I come here to read my poetry tonight as a black feminist lesbian poet. And this, I understand, is a conference that concerns the place of women in North American life and culture. There is no part of my identity that I see mirrored or underlined in that culture, and yet every part of who I am is a wellspring and a resource for whatever power I use in my life is a source for my work. Feminist.
Yeah, go back to the up to the cross there.
To see it?
No.
Yeah, there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is, and then you see the yellow icon there.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
means you have visited that place. If you go to another one, then it becomes a green icon. So you can always see the green ones are the last ones, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now my question is, can I show you more? Do you want to see a couple more?
Yeah.
And, okay, then we go back to the content.
Shall I have it?
Yeah,
so, no.
Down, yeah. Uh-huh. And so, there are political places, like for instance the East Side Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
Go there. Mm-hmm. And yeah, go to the last. And down the video. This is Gloria Joseph, Audrey's partner, who was in Berlin with her. Quite frequently during the 8 years, Audrey came for 8 years for several weeks or months at a time to Berlin.
The year 1989 brought the fall of the Berlin Wall and initiated a period of intense social change. Unfortunately, the reunification also had its gloomy side effect, an increase of xenophobia and racist actions in Germany.
In a typical Dorothy fashion, she was concerned with the fact that the day that war was falling, a black African man was being beaten up on the subways. You see, Audrey always could look at the other side of glory. You know, as she would say, what does it mean for the wall to fall and black people still being beaten up in Germany? You know? So she would be looking at what it meant to the little people, what it would mean in terms of animosity or conflict. I mean, she could celebrate, you know, for the obvious celebratory reasons, but she also was looking at, okay, now what?
This is my sixth trip to Berlin. This is a very different Berlin. There's a very different feeling. Time will tell if those changes are signs of progress. But when we hear that along with the talk of a unified Germany comes news of black students killed outside of the university here, when we hear stories of foreign workers beaten in Leipzig inside of their own living quarters, when we hear of the killing of Turkish youths, and the increase in anti-Semitic rhetoric as well as anti-Semitic actions, then we have serious question as to the definition of freedom in Germany. Each one of you sitting here has some power. I know that makes you uncomfortable enough to laugh, but you are responsible for using that power, whatever it is. And that is not altruism. That is survival.
Yeah. So you can see something like that can be an occasion for talking, for discussing, in classes. We feel that this can be used for teaching and in political groups, you know, this online journey. And it's, if you cannot show the whole film, which is 80 minutes long, then this is an occasion to give an introduction to Audrey, her times in Berlin, and also to Berlin in the 80s, in the early 90s. And there is some very precious material, which I can show you now, which is under the, it says Orlando, where she talks about, reviews her literary work for 2 months before her passing while she was in Berlin. And that's, you know, I think that's very special to have an author review, talk about her whole work, why, you know, why she rewrote things, explain poems which are not so easy to understand. So that's very, very special. That's under this point here. But I want to show you, I think I 1 minute, 2 minutes?
No, you still have about four and a half minutes.
Oh,
left.
Wow. So Audrey was very involved with the, also with the feminist movement in Berlin. So if we look at Schoko, go back there, yeah. Go down again. Yeah. What was I doing without you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is a women's project, and she's going to talk about
still
it.
Still existing.
Still existing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel a real lift in coming to Berlin. I think that the women's movement in Berlin is, how do you say, stark, and it has a lot of life and vitality. I look at certain initiatives that they are involved in, and it makes my heart sing to see what is possible. For example, the Chocolfabriek, the women's project. In 1984, when I was here, I remember being shown through that, and I remember the beautiful faces of the women in tent and discussing what it was going to be. At that point, it was upon that building. It was rubble. And I thought, these are wonderful dreams. Now I come back in 1987, and Ida showed me through the Chocolfabriek, and it was really wonderful to see what the women had accomplished in 3 years. It is not all done. It is not a fait accompli. But so much has happened. There are the rooms that they plastered and built with their own hands. There's roof garden that they trucked up earth and planted tomatoes. And it is wonderful. There are meeting rooms for battered women. There are places for women's therapy. They are planning a sauna for the Turkish women. It's heartwarming. That kind of energy I applaud and respect. And I see it operating a great deal in Berlin.
Okay, I have 1.5 minutes. Yeah, so there's also another person who is important, who was important for Audie and is important for all of us, Mai Ayim, Afro-German poet. There's a street named after her, Mai Ayim Ufer. We can do that now, but I want to point it just out to you. There you see Mai Ayim, who took her life in 96, recite a couple of her poems at the place which is now named after her. And you will see her now in the final piece I show you, where we find Audie dancing. This is there, yeah. This is the Mai Ayim Ufer. Okay. Now we want to go. I finished with something more private. And Die Zwei was a lesbian bar in the 80s, which we frequented quite often. Audie did a lot of dancing there and did a lot of looking for black women, which at that time was not so easy to find them. And here you see her dancing with Mai. This was the place where Die Zwei used to be. That's just another photo. And, yeah. And finish now with Audie dancing. This was the last party in 91. She was living with us at our place and was in our place. That's Mai in the green. So I hope this gave you an idea, and so I think there are multiple uses for this, and it's one way of keeping a person alive in a place, in a city, and I think this can be done with, you know, many persons, and so enjoy the city tour on your computer.
The film, by the way, is available from me or from Amazon. On the card, I don't like it, but I say it, no, because it's... On that card, you have contact, and you can make orders from me. And, on that card. Do you all have one of those? No, this is the card which gives you all the information.
And if you live in France, yes, from the Simone de Beauvoir Center.
Are there more
yeah.
of these
yeah. Yes, I give them.
Okay, so perhaps people could grab a card a bit later. We should move on to the next paper. I'd like to next introduce Veronica McKenzie from London. She is the community engagement lead for the, I always pronounce this word wrong, Haringey?
Haringey.
Yeah. Haringey Vanguard Project. Yeah. Haringey yeah. is an area in London. And a black and minority ethnicity LGBTQ Haringey History Project, 1970s to 1990s, in partnership with the London Metropolitan Archive. So Veronica's going to begin by showing us a film.
Hi. I'm going to do it the other way around.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right, sorry. Okay, no worries.
So, because there's not a lot of time, and firstly, it's so amazing to be here, so thank you very much for helping to organise this amazing, my first time at the conference. And to hear so many different researchers and to meet people working in the field has been amazing. The project really stemmed from some work that I started doing. I don't come from a research background or an academic background, but I wanted to do like a short project to find BME history in London, and I went online and I couldn't find anything. This is about 5 years ago. So I started talking to people that I knew had been active in the 80s and in the 90s, and just kind of like getting their stories, you know, looking at ideas about, you know, what do they remember? Is it documented anywhere? And it wasn't documented. And people hadn't really thought about their history and what they'd been doing or their contribution to some of the great social movements and LGBTQ movement in England, certainly. So it kind of spurred me on to look into this history. So like I said, I went online and there was literally nothing 5 years ago in the UK. So I carried out a series of interviews which led to a short documentary called Under Your Nose. And obviously what happens is when you start documenting people's histories, as you start sharing the work, other people come forward. Other people say, you need to speak to X, Y, and Z. You can't leave them out, the story's incomplete. So the documentary actually got bigger and bigger, so it's now a feature-length documentary. Mm. And even now when I show it, people will come forward and say, oh, you missed a bit. So it's like a work in progress, which I don't mind because it's been evolving over the last 3-4 years. And actually it's quite a pleasure to be able to work on something which is evolving, which is not set as a piece of work. That brought me into the world of archives, which I had no idea what an archive was, you know. And I went to the archive and they welcomed me in London Metropolitan Archives, Bishopsgate. They showed me how to access materials, and then I just went down a rabbit hole and just fell in love with the whole process, and it's been amazing. Why Haringey? Now, Haringey is a very particular part of North London. Haringey is one of the, I would say, three boroughs in London that were the first ones to adopt very progressive policies around LGBTQ experiences. So, for example, they were one of the key boroughs to look at adoption rights for LGBT couples, housing rights, education. You know, it was Haringey Council that led to the whole Section 28 because of their progressive policies and their aim to educate every young person in school about LGBT lives. They had very, very strong anti-heterosexist policies in place. So this is talking about 1982, 1983, when, you know, these policies were seen as being very radical. You know, a lot of people didn't understand why they needed to, you know, kind of formalise these policies and put them as part of their council manifesto. So they were really, like, pushing the boundaries for a lot of people. Haringey had a very negative connotation in terms of it was a place of huge disadvantage, lots of minority ethnic people living there, very low funds. So we had uprisings, I think we've had uprisings twice in the 80s. People call them riots,
people call them uprisings, it depends on which side of the fence you're on. But it was also the place where the first Black Lesbian and Gay Centre project was started in Haringey in 1985. So this is a government-funded project for the Black Lesbian and Gay community at the time to find a centre. So can you imagine how radical that was? Because first of all, you've got to acknowledge the existence of the lesbian and gay community, and then you've got to acknowledge the existence of the, you know, the Black and minority ethnic community within that, and then you've got to say we're going to give them money to find space. So it was really radical, and it was in Haringey. Haringey was where they opened in 1985. And the Bernie Grant Centre, which now occupies the site of the BLGC, the Black Lesbian and Gay Centre project, Bernie Grant was a black Labour councillor who supported LGBT rights in Haringey. So it's the first time that you see this intersectional approach. You know, you've got a black councillor. Traditionally, a lot of the black councillors, he was one of the first, but a lot of the black councillors were not supportive of LGBT rights. They were more concerned with racial politics in terms of looking at anti-racism and all the rest of it. They would not, you know, cross the floor, as it were. And he was the first one who stood up and said that, you know, LGBT rights, you know, black rights, you know, feminism, you know, Haringey did a lot of work around Irish women, did a lot of work around people with disabilities. They are all the same. They're all human rights. So that's why the centre is named after him. So Haringey is like a hotbed of, you know, sedition and, you know, and rebellion. So the project really, we've got three aims. So we want to reveal the history, so that previously hidden history. We want to collect testimonies from people that were active politically and socially in the 80s and the early 90s, because those were key periods, which I'll go into in a little bit. And we want to share that history. So there is an intergenerational approach with the project that we want to have young people sit and listen to these histories and also be inspired to, you know, form their own politics. And then we do lots of volunteering and workshops and stuff like that. So I'm going to see if I can come out of here. So how do I come out of here? End show. Okay. And then I'm going to show you a bit of the film. So the bit of the film I'm going to concentrate on, if I can do this. Let's have a look. Yeah, so I'm not sure how many of you know about Section 28, which was a piece of legislation that the government basically put in place to stop the teaching of LGBTQ issues in schools. So that's a narrative. So the reason why I want to show this section of the film is because for black and minority ethnic LGBT communities, their part in the narrative has not been documented as well. So everybody talks about Section 28 as if it was this great, the anti-Section 28 movement, but they don't look at the intersectional elements of it, and they don't look about where the actual protest against it came from. So I'm just going to show you a little bit about how Haringey and the Black Lesbian and Gay Centre and a lot of the black minority ethnic activists were key players in the anti-Section 28 movement. So let's go. Right.
I'm not getting sound.
Oh yeah, we have to do something with the sound, don't we? Sorry. Yes. No.
Over here?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
time,
thank
yeah.
you.
That's the thing. 2019, Max. Nobody likes Max in universities.
PCs are cheaper.
PCs are cheaper.
Okay.
For business.
Yeah.
With AIDS dominating the mainstream media, it wouldn't take much to provoke a backlash against lesbians and gay men. But in 1986, even the most politically aware lesbian and gay activist was caught off guard. Haringey Council under Bernie Grant had promised to tackle heterosexism in his manifesto.
So when the Lesbian and Gay Unit was set up, when we started work in 1986, one of the things we did was write a letter to all the schools in the borough saying, if you'd like us to help you implement this aspect of the manifesto, do get in touch. At the same time, someone had found a copy of Jenny Lives with Eric and Martin in one of the libraries.
Swedish author Suzanne Bosch wrote Jenny Lives with Eric and Martin in 1981 as a resource to reduce anti-gay prejudice.
Somebody in one of the Haringey schools perhaps slightly miffed at receiving this letter.
It's unreliable.
You have just to wait.
That's not the page.
Okay.
We were going to be educating all the Haringey children in how to be lesbian or gay. So before we knew it, there was a very vociferous campaign against the work of the unit. Questions were being asked at Prime Minister's question time.
Yeah, sorry about this.
You may recall that I intervened to ask the inner...
Okay. I'm going to change it over.
While you find that, I might just take the opportunity to make a few announcements.
Yeah.
I just wanted to remind everybody that there are film matinees and performances today. So these are in the program. So I encourage you to take a look at those, but in particular the film that Hongwei Bao will be speaking about will be playing in the first lunch break. Also, very important advertisement for the Grassroots and Small Organisations Networking meeting that will take place during the break as well. So that's a conflict, but you know, both very important. And also, there's a Twinning Cities meeting in the second break later today. So anyone who may be from a city that is part of the Berlin Twinning Cities, Twin Cities programme, might like to take an opportunity to go to that.
Okay,
great.
To ask the Inner London Education Company to take out of its libraries a book purporting to be on sex education, which showed two semi-naked men in bed with a girl of seven. I was advised by my officials that this book was propaganda for homosexuality and not education.
I was annoyed and irritated by it, because I knew that actually we weren't doing very much. I mean, we weren't doing half as much as we ought to be bloody doing, and half as much as they thought we were doing.
The West Indian Leadership Council and Haringey Black Pressure Group protested against positive images, the latter claiming that the council's policy was a racist policy aimed at breaking up the black family. Parents opposed to Haringey's positive images formed the Parents' Rights Group, an unholy alliance comprising Catholics, members with the links to the National Front, and faith groups. They picketed schools, urged parents to boycott lessons, and disrupt council meetings.
At no level were we supposed to be allowed to teach that homosexuality was a relational option for young people, or for any people. And if you're going to go into schools and you're going to start teaching sex education, the only thing you should teach is heterosexuality, bisexuality, homosexuality, any issues around gender reassignment. That was way out of anyone's comprehension as being an okay thing to be talking about.
Capital Gay, a lesbian and gay newspaper's office, suffered an arson attack. Books promoting positive images of lesbians and gay men were burned. A local Haringey school came under attack when a member of the parents' rights group tried to infiltrate a support group for young lesbians. The youth worker stopped the woman from entering, but the next day received a summons alleging he had punched and kicked her. She claimed to be pregnant and had miscarried. With no evidence of pregnancy or miscarriage, the case was thrown out of court. But the worker continued to receive death threats for months afterwards. Pressure from the right wing mounted. Lord Halsbury proposed an amendment of the Local Government Act 1986, subtitles, an act to refrain local authorities from promoting homosexuality.
The word promotion has a particular legal meaning. I wasn't personally bothered by it. A lot of people were. And it did frighten people. And lots of the more cautious councils didn't do things that Lambeth was doing.
But the die was cast. Anything deemed to be about homosexuality came under scrutiny.
Because of the attack on Haringey and because of the attack on lesbian and gay equality, it was actually having an effect whereby all lesbians and gay men started to feel attacked and threatened. And so it's very much the flavour of the day that we were being attacked and we were being told that, you know, that lesbian and gay equality wasn't important and that things, you know, lesbian and gay initiatives shouldn't be funded.
I'll just go forward. You've got 1 minute?
Mm-hmm.
50 seconds. It's very difficult. So this is just
apology and retraction.
A little bit about the
first National Black Gay Men's Conference was the first to address the specific needs of black gay men.
Some of those young black gay men as well who contracted HIV largely through ignorance. And there wasn't any kind of provision for them.
Haringey Action was organised in response to the upsurge and backlash against equality. That's where positive images grew up, in particular in mobilising against those who were claiming that it was somehow against black traditions or undermining the black family or even genocidal of black people. Lesbians and gays were treated with respect and gay equality.
Before the next one starts, I want to mention that Nicole from the Centre Simone de Beauvoir archive, and they have the French edition of the All the Lord film. They produce French subtitles and are distributing the French edition. On the other DVD, it's also French and German and Spanish as languages, but in French you get it from there.
I don't know what happened. I don't read German, so.
Just press.
Yeah. There is a password. So
yeah.
Ah,
well.
And I think Kate is going to look for the password.
No,
So maybe during the technical problems, I will introduce myself and my colleague. My name is Nicole Fernandez Ferrer, and I'm the executive director of Centre Audiovisuel Simone de Beauvoir in Paris, as you heard my French accent. And my colleague Suzette Robichon, who is in the committee board of the center.
Yes. Yes, I adapt. I am also in the board of Lesbian Archive in Paris. So if you have any questions.
So I will present the center really briefly, because I prefer to show you some excerpt of film. It was founded in 1982 by Delphine Seyrig, the French actress. I think that you know her. By Carol Roussopoulos, the pioneer of activist video in Europe. And Yona Vider, translator and friend of the woman. It was really original at this time to open a center, audiovisual feminist center in Paris, and to make some archives and to continue to produce new films on women's history, on body, sexual rights, art, sport, works, struggles, and many other things. Nowadays, the collection contains 1,300 films, mainly videos, but also prints, on feminism, LGBTQ, Q&A rights, and
Which one is it?
This one, montage.
This one?
Yeah. Thank you.
Hmm?
So we have this collection of films, and we also organize some workshop with young people about stereotypes. We work in jail with women and men presenting film and making some screenings, and we also organize seminar with artists. And on the 4th of July, a big exhibition about Delphine Seyrig will open in Lille, in the north of France. And in September 24 in Madrid, in Reina Sofia Museum. So if you are in Lille or in Madrid, please come to see this exhibition. It's the first exhibition on Delphine Seyrig. Delphine Seyrig was a very well-known French actress, but she was also a feminist and a human rights activist. So it's really important to go to see this this exhibition. I just want to mention some things about the film that you are going to see. So you can go on our website to know more about us, or just talk to me during this session. The first film about FAR, so it's a revolutionary homosexual action front. It was in 71. It's the first demonstration of gay and lesbian people in the street of Paris. And it was during the demonstration of 1st of May. You know, it's the traditional demonstration with workers. Mm-hmm. So they decided, men and women, to go in the demonstration. So it was a little bit, it was a problem with the unions, because it doesn't want to have gay and lesbian in their demonstration. So you are going to see that. Mm-hmm. And it's really important also because you see the role of the woman, the lesbian, in this first demonstration. The second film is a demonstration against the repression of homosexuality, June 77. The demonstration takes place in Paris against, I don't know if some the older remember Anita Bryant. You know Anita Bryant? She was an American folk singer, but she was not really known for that, but because she make a very a big statement against gay and lesbian rights. So you are going to see this one. And after, Jeunet talks about Angela Davis.
Jean Genet, a French writer, decide to go to the French television and to say something against the US government, but finally it was totally censored. So it's we just have this this film as a testimony of Genet talking about Angela Davis. And we go further to a Female Closet, a film made by Barbara Hammer, the American filmmaker, experimental filmmaker. After that, No Gravity, made by Silvia Casalino, about the role of lesbian and woman in the space science and technology. Next one, Arcady Doors, about men and women coming from Africa as refugees in France. And the last one is about a football club, a lesbian football club in South Africa. So it's a mix of, so I want just to show you that we have filmed from all around the world, from many, many different subjects. And we try to restore the film and to be able to make some screening all around the world and to make some conferences too. So I just,
should there be sound? Yeah. Maybe try and read.
Well, there is no sound there.
Jusqu'ici, il n'y avait eu que la constitution d'un certain nombre de ghettos, très peu en Europe, mais enfin, pas mal en Amérique. Ghettos genre dancing, endroit où on peut ben, faire des rencontres pour baiser, mais surtout un endroit où enfin nous libérons les rues au lieu de montrer notre sexualité dégoûtante autant que nous soyons parqués. Ça, ça ne nous plaisait pas. Ce que nous avons voulu, c'est avoir un contact avec les autres, ce qu'on nous refusait. Et justement, nous nous sommes demandé pourquoi on nous refusait ce contact, pourquoi nous ne pouvions pas parler avec les gens. Évidemment, l'habitude de ne pas parler faisait que nous n'y arrivions pas, d'ailleurs, au début. Pourquoi est-ce qu'on nous empêche de parler avec les gens, de nous expliquer, et même de les agresser comme eux-mêmes nous ont agressés? C'est parce que, nous l'avons vu, nous sommes une sorte de contradiction interne dans la société. Comme les autres, nous naissons de la famille hétérosexuelle bourgeoise, avec son système d'éducation, les femmes élevées en vue de la procréation, et les hommes pour être des mâles inséminateurs phallocrates. Nous, évidemment, c'est différent. L'homme et la femme ne sont pas égaux dans le couple, c'est connu. La femme n'est pas égale économiquement. Elle est faite surtout pour langer les marmots, pour repriser les chaussettes de son mari. Résultat ? Deux hommes et deux femmes, au contraire, ça peut être l'égalité, à condition bien sûr qu'ils ne se mettent pas à singer le couple hétéroflic dans notre vocabulaire, c'est-à-dire le couple où il y aura un gars qui dirigera et l'autre qui fera les travaux ordinairement réservés à la femme.
Sorry, but this one is moving on. We need subtitles. franchement, moi je m'en fous.
La manif, je sais même pas c'est sur quoi. Oui, est-ce qu'ils sont réprimés pour faire une manifestation? Manifestation, c'est qu'on est réprimé, non?
Bah, c'est ce qu'ils ont l'air de dire, oui.
Somebody understand French? Because they are talking about the fact to know if there is some repression against gay and lesbian. So they are trying to say it's not gay and lesbian specially repressed, but mainly love. And after that, they are going to talk about marriage between gay and lesbian, saying that it's impossible, it's not normal. So you see, it was in 77. Mm-hmm. And they are really young people.
Je sais pas, je n'ai pas remarqué.
Tu n'as pas remarqué que les homosexuels étaient réprimés?
Ah si, beaucoup.
Dans la société en général, mais enfin, je veux dire, il y a beaucoup de choses. Par exemple, une fille qui fait l'amour avec son avant le mariage aussi est réprimée par la société. Hein. Donc il n'y a pas que. Hein. Donc en fin de compte, c'est l'amour qui est réprimé, c'est pas eux.
Oui, ils sont réprimés.
Comment ils sont réprimés?
Oh, c'est explicable, hein, quand même. C'est contre nature ce qu'ils font, quand même. Hein. Moi, je suis tout à fait contre
ça. He's saying it's normal, it's against nature. Nature. Like, it's always the same. Tu penses
que c'est normal que tu sois réprimé, que tu sois interdit? Non.
Ça soit interdit, bon, on est en liberté, ils font ce qu'ils veulent, d'accord, mais enfin, quand même,
faut le faire. Non, parce que c'est pas de leur faute, ils ont été faits comme ça, ils ont des tendances. C'est à cause de leur éducation.
C'est de la faute de la société.
Non, c'est leur éducation. C'est un gars qui a été élevé comme une fille. Bon, bah,
So the woman say if a boy is raised like a girl, it's normal that he's going to be gay.
Quel rapport? Si. Non, je pense que quand on a vraiment des tendances en soi-même, bon, bah, pourquoi pas.
Ouais. Bon, ils font ce qu'ils veulent, mais tout le monde s'en
met. Non, mais tu sais qu'il y a des trucs au point de vue sciences naturelles, quoi. Des glandes, enfin des choses qui.
Yes, they think that it's a hormonal problem. Hormone, you say that? Hormone? Mm-hmm. It's a hormonal problem.
Non, pas à la naissance, pas à l'éducation. Ah, si, non, à la naissance.
Non, l'éducation, ça. L'éducation,
ça a été vachement.
C'est l'éducation.
Non, je dis pas qu'il faut les faire de la répression, mais enfin, c'est quand même contre nature.
Les flics.
Alors, faut pas. Je sais pas. C'est peut-être dangereux aussi de l'accepter complètement.
Oui. C'est dangereux, pourquoi?
Je sais pas, dans ce cas-là, on pourrait aller loin, faire des mariages aussi entre homosexuels, des trucs comme ça. Enfin, c'est vrai, c'est contre nature.
Ce serait dangereux, des mariages entre homosexuels.
And the young boys say, if they marry between us, it's the end of the race. So, c'est vrai. So a French writer, Rezvani, invited Genet to go to the French TV and to make this statement about Angela Davis. And so they came to the hotel where John Genet lives, and they just shot three times. And hopefully, Carol Roussopoulos and Paul Roussopoulos were there and filmed all the action. And so it's a the unique pieces about this.
C'est à la nation blanche américaine que je m'adresse. Nous connaissons votre plan. Vous vous êtes aperçu que les Noirs américains sont intelligents. Depuis que vous savez qu'ils vous dépassent dans la réflexion révolutionnaire, vous avez décidé, et je redis le mot décidé, de les anéantir. Bob Seale, vous le réservez pour la chaise électrique du Connecticut. Jackson sera conduit à la chambre à gaz en Californie. Vous essaierez de faire disparaître Angela Davis et le peuple noir, espérez-vous, aura assez de frousse pour avoir des gestes toujours plus obliques pour vous servir et pour se taire. Votre plan est au point. Même cette télévision d'où je vous parle nous disait avec dégoût que Reagan sablait le champagne après la capture d'Angela. Donc, tout est en place. Vos flics qui ont déjà tiré sur un juge de façon à mieux tuer trois noirs, vos flics, votre administration, vos magistrats s'entraînent tous les jours, et vos savants aussi, pour massacrer les noirs, d'abord les noirs, tous, ensuite les indiens qui ont survécu, ensuite les chicanos, ensuite les radicaux blancs, ensuite, je l'espère, les libéraux blancs, ensuite les Blancs, ensuite l'administration blanche, ensuite vous-même. Alors le monde sera délivré. Il y restera, après votre passage, le souvenir, la pensée et les idées d'Angela Davis et de Black Panther.
So I have 3 minutes left.
One and a half.
So I go directly to the last one. Sorry. It's terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It's a big frustration.
I was thinking to make a center somewhere, somehow, and the people, they teach something to us.
My mom drove me out at the age of 11 because they say he see my behavior. And at that time, I didn't know what is a lesbian. Why my mom, why I'm not in my family. 2001, I call her. The only thing I said to her, I said, I'm old enough now. There are things happened maybe long time ago. Since I'm an adult, can we meet and talk? The words I've got, he said, I'm not coming a stubborn anymore. Okay, then I dropped the phone. I took the taxi and I went back. But the way I went back, I go straight to her sister and I explained everything. That day I told myself, Guti, I'm done. I'm old enough, I grew up without her. Let me live my life.
Great conclusion.
I want to say that
we invited the Tokozani Club from Johannesburg in Paris 10 years ago. And we played together in the Parc des Princes, the big stadium in Paris. So, and if you are interested, we have a shop here. Yes.
We have online. Yeah. Online.
I can send you a link.
Yeah. When, okay.
Hmm? Okay, I'll have my USB stick, so that's not
that you have online. Yeah.
No, it's not free online, but for
Thank you, everyone, for your patience. As I mentioned at the beginning, the chairperson for this session was unable to make it to the conference, so it's a little bit wonky. My organization of the session is a little bit wonky, but thank you. I think the nice thing is having a panel of filmmakers having such good finales on all that.
Can you repeat where the Community Archives Caucus is meeting? Did you say? Sorry, I don't want to.
Maybe in the discussion. Yeah. So our next speaker is Hongwei Bao, who I'm very, very happy is also a member of our international board. For the conference and has been providing a lot of guidance and assistance to us in promoting the conference. I've lost my page.
Thank you.
And is one of those who belongs to the sort of the old family of the Elms conference series. So, yeah, please.
Thank you. Okay, so my talk is really about a Chinese queer film made a few years ago in 2015. It's called We're Here. I don't assume that everybody knows about the film, but probably some of you probably have heard about the UN conferences on women So in short, so from 1975 to 1995, four world conferences on women were held in different parts of the world, and the last one was held in Beijing in 1995. I'm a historian of Chinese queer studies, so basically I interview gays and lesbians in China on what China's historical changes and queer community histories, and more than one of them has mentioned this conference to me. And at that time, I knew nothing about this UN conference on women and couldn't figure out its implications on China. Mm-hmm. And as I started to do some research, the implications have started actually to become clearer to me. And in short, actually, probably some of you may know that from 4th to 15th of September 1995, and about 31,000 women from 200 countries came to Beijing for this UN conference on women. And it was the largest international women's conference held, probably still to date, but at least during that time. And what's more, it brought together women from all over the world. And it also actually exposed Chinese women and Chinese gays and lesbians to their international counterparts. This was the first time, and more than one person, interviewees have mentioned that before that, they have only heard about so-called Western feminists or Western gays and lesbians. It was their first time in real life to meet their Western counterparts, and they have learned a lot from these international practices. And the conference has passed the Platform for Action and the Beijing Declaration, which was an important document. And from then on, every 5 years, the UN held a review, and each country supposedly has to submit a report and summarizing how they have actioned on these platforms for action. And Hillary Clinton made a famous speech in which there's a famous line called, "Women's rights are also human rights once and for all." So this is what is generally known and remembered about the conference. And of course, there's also the Platform for Action, which identified about 12 critical areas for action. And a lesbian activist, Beth Ditsy from South Africa, made a speech at the conference, basically advocating lesbian rights. And one of her slogans, or one of the slogans, one of the banners hung on the conference banner, although at that time probably illegal and probably controversial, it's called "Lesbian Rights Are Human Rights." And it was the first time that lesbian rights or LGBTQ rights were clearly articulated at an important international occasion. What was not mentioned a lot in historical archives was the NGO forum also held in Beijing at that time during the women's conference. Strangely, actually, so the NGO forum was part of the conference, but the Chinese government at that time were worried about the possible controversy or political sensitivity of the NGO forum. So at the last minute, it moved the NGO forum to Huairou, which is kind of small town, small suburb, mm-hmm. an hour drive away from downtown Beijing, etc. So basically, about 200 lesbians, together with other women actually representing different NGOs from all over the world, held their NGO forum here. And at the forum, there was, for the mm-hmm. first time at the conference, a lesbian tent. Mm. So at the lesbian tent, I realize a lot of you probably have experienced that history, so I'm probably talking about something that you already know. So at the lesbian tent, I'm mostly international LGBT organization, NGOs, as well as Chinese lesbians. Not many, but there were Chinese lesbians yes. present at the time. Yes. Great.
And a lot of love affair.
Yes. So I've heard a lot of interesting things. This is what I. Basically there are two buses took all the lesbian participants to a lesbian bar, to a gay bar at that time in downtown Beijing called the Nightman Disco Club, and basically, I mean, people had a good time, and after they were danced at the bar, of course, they didn't stop over there, and there was a lot of interesting encounters, what I call the transnational, lesbian or transnational queer encounters, which was really important for Chinese lesbians who went to that conference at the time. And what was the impact? A lot of lesbians participated in that conference, including He Xiaopei. He Xiaopei later founded the Pink Space, which was one of the earliest lesbian LGBT, lesbian NGOs in China. And Xu Bin wasn't there, but she heard of the conference. She was inspired by the conference. She founded the NGO called Tong Yu, Common Language. And then also a lesbian magazine was founded also by this person. So Sam is an English name. And Lesbian Salon was also established in Beijing to bring together lesbians from China and experts in Beijing at the time to talk about topics about sexuality, identity, and so on. In other words, that moment was considered to be a historical moment in China's LGBTQ movement. A lot of people would attribute the start of the LGBTQ and queer feminist movement from China to that historical moment when Western feminists came to China and brought feminist and queer ideas and so on. So what happened after that? So every 5 years there was a review of the conference. We're reviewing the progress in each country about women's status. And several years ago, there was a Beijing Plus 20, which marks the 20th anniversary of the conference. And a film was made by Shitou. Shitou is a lesbian film at the bottom. Shitou is a lesbian filmmaker from China. She has made several films, including Women 50 Minutes, We Want to Get Married, and so on. And then there's also the Zhao Jing, otherwise known as Sam. Just now I mentioned somebody has started a lesbian magazine called Les Plus, and she was one of the editors. The magazine has stopped several years ago. And the writer or script writer was Wei Tingting. If you know about the feminist five who was arrested on International Women's Day a few years ago, and she was one of the feminist fives. So basically, these five queer identified women, if they want to make a film about the 20th anniversary of the Beijing conference, what would the film look like? So this is a film that we're going to show during the film matinee. And so just to give you an advert and to encourage you to go to the film screening. By the way, the film director Shitou also recorded a welcome message for this conference, and we're going to show that at the film screening. But I have a trailer here, which is what?
Beijing 1995. Open!
Queer issues were in some ways everywhere and in some ways nowhere.
Women's rights are human rights once and for all.
Recognize in the platform for action that lesbian rights are women's rights.
Sorry about the small screen, but you will have time to watch the big screen during the lunch break. So make sure that you get your lunch as soon as possible and watch the film. But a few words to say before the film screening and before the discussion. So this was actually always celebrated as a so-called beginning of China's LGBT movement and beginning of China's feminist and queer rights, etc. However, this historical archive and this kind of memory is also problematic because it basically erases a kind of feminist histories in China represented not at least by the Women's Federation of China, which is an official government body representing women. So it's probably one of the largest, actually, women's organizations in the world, because each work units, each universities, companies, etc., would have a kind of women's union association, a women's union branch. So, from 1940s on, after the founding of the People's Republic, the Women's Association has claimed to represent women's rights and have passed a lot of laws guaranteeing women's rights. Of course, it is controversial, actually, what kind of representation is that, but still, a lot of policy changes have already been made. Before 1985, a lot of women's study centers were established, and people debated heavily on how to translate gender, sexuality, feminism, because those terms were not native to China. And also, for instance, women, we have 女性, 妇女, 女人, they are used in Chinese language. They represent different female subjectivities. For 女性主义, feminism, you have women, you have kind of womenism, 女性主义, you also have women's rightsism, 女权主义. Which one translates feminism exactly? So academics and NGO workers, as well as government officials, scholars, debated heavily on what is feminism and in China like, and what is the difference between Chinese feminism, Western feminism. One of the actual proposals at that time was that Chinese feminism is deeply rooted in socialist feminism or in socialism. So gender is not simply an issue about sexual identity or gender identity. It is intertwined with other sorts of social development and identities as well. And there was a very strong belief in that women's rights should be deeply intertwined and with the social development, with the social equalities and justices at a wider range, especially economic development and social development and so on. So 20 years on in China, a lot of things have happened. A lot of LGBT NGOs are existing in China, fighting for different range of different types of rights, represented in recent years by the Feminist Fives, who put on straight performances advocating women's rights and against domestic violence. So this is the first picture on the top. And then there's also the Me Too movement. In China, you can't say Me Too because few people understand that. Rather, they transliterate that into me, which is rice, and too, which is rabbit. So it's kind of rice bunny or rice rabbit, which is a Chinese version of Me Too movement. So the younger generation of feminists have become increasingly vocal, and they follow closely on Western practices. And at the same time, there were increasing disagreements between older generation of feminists and younger generation of feminists. The older generation of feminists actually rely on, if you like, the policy changes of the state, and they address problems more than sexual violence and so on. But younger generation of feminists has a strong emphasis on, in general, on individualism, on women's rights, women's body rights as property rights, and so on. They follow closely a liberal feminist framework. Therefore, in China, essentially, there wasn't a kind of productive dialogue between the two generations of feminists at the moment. And many people see it impossible because of historical experiences of the two generations of women to actually have a kind of production dialogue. So in this context, it is important to reflect on the policy of memory. How do we remember 1995? Do we remember 1995 as the kind of the starting point of China's feminist activism and queer activism? Or do we remember it as a kind of long historical trajectory of women's struggles for equality and justice in China and worldwide? The kind of socialist enterprise for equality and international solidarity. It's more of a collective struggle rather than an emphasis on individual women's rights and so on. So yes, in writing about queer history, on the one hand, there is a need actually to have conversations with feminist history. And on the other hand, probably actually the discussions in the 1990s at the time about what is the cultural specificity of Chinese feminism as situated in the Chinese context and Chinese history is still very much needed. So that's all for my presentation. Thanks very much.
Because I had to deal with the technical issue, I wasn't here to introduce Suzette and Nicole, but I should also mention that, thank you very much, but I should also mention that Suzette is also a member of our international board. So we had two members of the international board. So we have very, very little time left for discussion and questions. So what I would like to do is give you 2 minutes to talk to your neighbour, the people sitting next to you. We call this in Germany a Murmelrunde, it's a murmuring round, which gives you the opportunity to have a little talk and maybe develop a question. And then I probably will only be able to accept about 3 questions. So 2 minutes.
So most of them are on Wikipedia, but if you could send me an email, I'll be happy. Thank you. Were you at in 1995 in Beijing?
No, it was before.
Okay, yes. Yeah, let's talk afterwards. Okay, great. Thank you. Yes. Really? This is great. Thanks very much.
This is my topic. So, just writing on here. It's going to be an interaction in the auditorium where we have the opening. And remember the big one. Yes.
Yes, just a minute.
Can I wrap up your discussion?
Yeah, that's just not. Sorry.
Okay, so attention, please. So I hope that you've all had a fruitful 2 minutes with your neighbours. So I'm very sorry, but I can accept about 3 questions. I'd like to take, contributions from the floor. Yes. Hi. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, sure. Hi, my name is Chloe. I'm from London, so I was particularly interested in Veronica's presentation. And Veronica, I was just wondering what you thought about the current situation in the UK, because when I saw your presentation, there were the protests outside the school, and that's been happening in Birmingham with Anderson Park School, and people protesting against teaching with no outsiders programme. And of course, we've got the sex education curriculum coming soon, and I was wondering if you thought it's going to be inclusive at all.
So it feels like we've kind of gone back to 1987, mm-hmm. like in lots of ways politically. there's so many parallels in terms of the rise of the right wing, you know, the rise of individualism, you know, pressure on people's incomes, you know, the media kind of pushing this doctrine of blame the immigrants and, do you know what I mean? So against the backdrop of that, then we've got people that are trying to exercise a little bit of power, what power they've got, and then a lot of it is showing through, you know, what they can do with their children. Do you know what I mean? That they have the ability to pull their children out of school. They don't want their children to engage in education about LGBT relationships. And in a way, a lot of people, from my understanding, haven't even read the course curriculum. They haven't even read the form of words. They're just reacting very much in a knee-jerk reaction. We don't want our children to know anything about LGBT. The way they term it is sex. But it's not even about that. So, you know, I think it's, in a way, it's almost kind of like a red herring, because it's, you know, we're not teaching people about LGBT sex. Do you know what I mean? When children go from their home to the bus stop, they're going to meet queer people, they're going to pass, do you know what I mean? It's in their lives. So I think, in a way, the discussion maybe needs to move on to, you know, to looking at the deeper questions of why don't you want your children, you know, to attend? What is your fear? Have you actually read the words? Do you know what I mean? Rather than this massive kind of confrontation, in a way, which is draining a lot of energy, it's not really going to get anywhere, because both sides are going to get more entrenched. And one side is just acting out of fear and ignorance, really. In a way, it's slightly different from the 80s. In terms of the 80s, you didn't have the legal support, but you didn't have rights enshrined in law, but we do now. So, do you know what I mean? So in a way, it's kind of like a, you know, it's almost like a, what do you call it, like, not clickbait, but there is a thing of it's a struggle that's going on, but it's almost like a diversion. And I think my approach would be, you know, have you read the word? Do you know what I mean? Like, my approach would be informational, educational. These are the words. How can you know what I mean? And just a slightly different approach. Yeah, but I mean, it's not great. It's, you know, at all.
Another question. Yeah.
This one's for Dagmar. And I was really enjoying the, like, breadth of material in the walking tour, and I was wondering if in the interface it tells you where those materials come from, if they all come from the Audre Lorde archives, and if it links people to it. So
well, some of it is in my personal archive, but most of the materials are in the Audre Lorde archive at the university. Videos as well as transcripts of interviews, of readings, and now there's a young woman from Colombia, from Bogota. She actually transcribed the courses which Audrey taught at the university, which is really quite a fantastic thing, you know. And that will be published in Chicago by a small press. There you get the exchange, and also with the students. And does that answer your question?
Yeah. I was just, because it's like its own body of information, so I was wondering how it connects.
And then, but you also can look at YouTube. There's an Audre Lorde playlist, which has a lot of the material, additional materials too, and which has complete, like the first reading you saw when it was at the America House, was at the Association of North American Studies, and the complete reading will be, I think it's not yet, but will be online. And also her last reading in our place in Berlin, which was like a few months before her death, is already online. So you get a lot of different materials from 84 to 92, you know, different periods in her life also.
Is it public at the Freie Universität?
Yes, it's public.
So you can
and
look at
Yeah. You can go to Free University of Berlin archives, the library archives, and then there's, if you put in Audre Lorde, actually on this card, you have infos and links, and there's the link to the archive. Okay. And And you can go there, it's digitized by now. And
I just wanted to say that for the first time, I come from Denmark, and there's a young woman who has translated and selected some poems of Audre Lorde. So the first time it's out in Danish. So
I know, and there was a screening of the film.
Exactly. No,
two,
yeah.
three times together with the launching of the book. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I am Valentina Leoncu. I am a queer woman creator from Romania, and I have a question, a practical question, actually, for the two French ladies, Ms. Suzette and Ms.
French ladies?
French ladies.
In the lesbian tent.
I know that French are producing a lot of artifacts, a lot of culture, and I'm wondering, you don't have problems with space and to preserve these archives?
So we have an agreement.
Where do you store? How do you preserve?
Yes, it's a good question. We have an agreement with the French National Library, so they digitize all the films. They keep one an exemplaire.
One copy.
Yeah. Thank you. One copy. Yeah. We have the copy, and the original is stored in a special room in the French National Library. But it's always our archives. It's not the archives of the French government or the French National Library. So it's in France we have this. It's a very good opportunity to. And so all the researchers, students, they can come to the French National Library and get access to all the archives of the center. Yeah. And or they can come to the center. Of if you are a professional, we can send you links. With English subtitle, sorry for the problem today. So it's easy. And no, the problem of space is it's not so big now because with digitalization, it took no more place. But we have all the videotapes, you know, the old one from the beginning, so it needs more space. So it's the reason for what we send it to the French National Library. And also because, as you know, you need not to be too hot, not to be too cold, not to be too humid, to the robot. Mm. So it's impossible in our.
It's very hard to make it on your own.
What?
It's very hard to make it on your own to build such a space that
yes.
can store properly documents on video. They are fragile.
Yes, it's very fragile. And especially from the 70s, as you saw, some need some restoration and it costs a lot of money. Mm. Oh, sorry.
It's okay. I'm sorry that we have to end the discussion, but we have reached the end of the session. I'd just like to thank our speakers very, very much. Everybody to approach them during the lunch breaks and continue the discussions. And don't forget that tonight is the documentary film night where there will also be further films which sort of speak to similar themes. So many, many thanks. And thank you all for your patience for the session.
Thank you for
your guidance.